Greetings, Brendan.
Ahoy, ahoy, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is right where it's supposed to be. Number 117 for all you good folks. How's it going, Brendan?
It's going great. I'm on vacation.
Oh, sweet. Vacation's good. I think, I guess most of America gets a vacation next week if you're doing Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff. Are you taking vacation all the way through that, or?
I work a couple days.
Okay.
But, yeah, basically the 2 weeks.
Not bad.
I'm able to commit my time on this staycation to good food and going to the movies. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we will get down to that, toot sweet. But first, let's jump into what is becoming, again, a perennial favorite on the show, Fuck the Police. And this time we're going international again. We're going to Brazil, where apparently the stats for crime and just kind of police action related to crime were recently released for last year. And kind of a disturbing stat if you average it out. There are a lot of homicides in Brazil, apparently. It's a pretty high number. But what's also disturbing in that is that the police apparently kill a lot of people just kind of in course of enforcing various things. And it's apparently 6 people per day if you average that out. So it's like, what is that, 1,900 people or something like that over the course of a year? It's a lot of people. That's kind of wild. So there's definitely some people throwing some glances in that direction to figure out if how lethal force is justified and stuff like that. So I think we got kind of up in arms in this country about the events in Ferguson, and it's still kind of a big deal. That's still under investigation and being looked at. So in Brazil, I guess it's really, really, really a problem. So before the United States goes kind of in that direction, it's probably good to keep an eye on what's happening, which is really what the whole reason behind this, quote unquote, segment of the show is. We're not actually anti-police. I think the police are generally a good idea in not only, I guess, in America, but in general. But unchecked power, something about absolute power, blah blah blah, something. I'm sure someone said it, and we'll say it again. But what do you think?
Yeah, we know where the bar is. 6 people a day. Let's try and beat that. America's not number one in a lot of areas, but let's try not to be number one in police-caused deaths per day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't at all say, like, have any... The article that we found doesn't have a lot of necessarily discussion about, any specific cases or anything like that, but, in any kind of measure, that's a very high number. And so a little more scrutiny.
Looking at the statistics, the police are way behind the criminals because the average homicide is 1 every 10 minutes.
Oh, yikes.
Someone gets murdered every 10 minutes in Brazil.
Oh my gosh.
So, the police not doing as bad.
It's kind of a lot. It's a lot. So, don't go to Brazil. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure what to take away from this one. That's kind of a lot going on.
Over 50,000 people murdered in the last year.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. So, keep an eye out for the police, but then also for any other perpetrators of killing. I think we can all agree killing is not a thing. So,
Don't.
Be careful out there. Another case of killing not being a thing is poaching. And poaching specifically of protected species and things like that. In Nevada, there were a group of people that were poaching animals, and the game wardens in Nevada caught them. And the way they caught them was the poachers were putting their pictures and pictures with their kills on Facebook. So, oops. I think that's probably on the poachers. So, in one sense, good for the game wardens for tracking that down and bringing folks to justice. On the other end of it, though, I'm a little concerned because the way that the article was written, it made it sound like they used Facebook pictures as essentially their the reasoning that they brought to the judge for getting warrants for their arrest. And I'm not sure I'm okay with that part of it. I think it's one thing to use that as a way of finding something out, but then I suppose, you know, when you're under arrest, you're still innocent until proven guilty. But I think, you know, there's things
well,
like
pictures kind of prove you guilty.
Well, I don't know. There's this funny thing called Photoshop that I think people have kind of been wise to as time's been going on, and I think it certainly is not an admission of guilt, but it certainly is cause for checking stuff out.
If you're dumb enough to put pictures of you committing a crime on social media and not set your privacy settings to stop people from seeing those pictures, then you deserve everything you get. No one forces you to put anything on the internet.
That's very
true.
If
you're caught because of that, that's totally on you.
Yeah, the I think, you know, the this kind of comes back to a topic we've hit on the show a lot about, you know, what you share and why you share and what the internet is supposed to do for you. In this case, you know, using it as your kind of picture dumping ground is probably the wrong reason.
Curate your stream.
Yeah, exactly.
Just that would prevent this from happening. Also, don't poach animals.
Yeah.
Only as a cooking method should you be poaching. Poach eggs, not wild animals.
I like it. I like it. Well, speaking of putting things on the internet that probably shouldn't be there, there's a website that we found this week called Kick Ended. So you've heard of Kickstarter, where you will put up ideas that you want to get backing and funding and generate awareness. It's usually used more recently less as a funding kind of method, as more like a way to create buzz and do pre-orders, or at least a lot of the more successful ones tend to be set up that way. It's not that they're not going to get funded or they're not going to be able to sell it. The infrastructure required to actually create and sell a lot of the items in the scale that people want generally require you to have figured out a lot more of the logistics. And so a lot of Kickstarters do fail because they don't take that into account, even if they get enough money. But what's interesting about Kick Ended, which I think is just kickended.com, these are Kickstarters that got zero money, so no backers at all. And that's fascinating to me. Just as a like social experiment to look at what's going on. So if you go to the website, you get a random Kickstarter that has zero backers, and there's no commentary at all. It's just purely Kickstarter projects that were scraped out of the database and then saved. So you know, for posterity, essentially. There is an, I think, about link in the top, and they kind of discuss why they created the site and stuff. But some of the things are just fun to look at. Like, what, how bad does something have to be that you get zero hits?
Well, there was a guy from Bristol in the UK who wanted to make a ham and cheese sandwich.
What is this?
That was what his Kickstarter was for, to make the best ham and cheese sandwich.
Okay. Yeah. Which just goes to show anyone can do anything on the internet. So, you know.
Or there was a guy from North Carolina who offered himself as a guinea pig for regrowing hair.
Uh-huh.
And said he would try any method and be basically a science experiment for somebody. And nobody contributed to that.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think so much of Kickstarter, especially recently, besides the pre-orders aspect to it, there's definitely a way of crafting the video that they kind of suggest everyone make, that they all look the same. It's like the same company, you know, built them, and it's totally ripping off, you know, that style, which I think, I want to say Apple kind of, I don't think they originated it, but they definitely perpetuate it, where it's this kind of light, instrumental music, very poppy, and then, you know, Dolly and sweeping shots of a product. Nothing handheld. Everything's very, very meticulously crafted, and then, you know, the person talking to the camera in a very kind of color block kind of shirt or whatever. It's just there's a real kind of rhythm and weight to those videos that have they all look very much the same. I usually don't watch the videos, but recently I went on a run through to look at a couple, just because it was so fascinating how similar they looked. So, and it doesn't matter what product it is. So it's like there's some like consulting agency that they've all created their videos in the same way, or maybe this is just one of those, you know, weird groupthink kinds of ideas about how you're supposed to, you know, sell something on the internet, I guess.
Yeah, for a place that's supposed to be a place for innovation to grow and, you know, get funding, it seems odd that they would all use the same method to try and attract people.
And I think their restrictions about stuff has really kind of caused a couple other websites to you know, essentially steal that crowdfunding kind of model. Indiegogo, and then Patreon is like an indie gamer specific like crowdfunding site. There are a few others, but crowdfunding is a thing, and I think that's still around. I think any way that the funding can be done as actual funding is probably better for innovation than a Kickstarter, because again, I feel like a lot of those Kickstarters would be made anyway. It seems like, you know, like major companies are doing stuff through Kickstarter that absolutely don't need to do Kickstarters. They're just doing it because they're, you know, it's kind of an in way to get people involved. And that's fine. I think that's, there are better ways to do that. But calling it a funding goal is kind of ludicrous, I think, for some of those kinds of things. But anyway, if you want to look at a bunch of Kickstarters that didn't make it and kind of have that, you know, Schadenfreude moment, that's the we'll link that in the show notes for sure.
Or use it as a learning experience if you're starting your own Kickstarter to not do what they did.
Yeah, a lot of the internet, especially in the early days, was really based about copying good ideas. This is one of those, like, don't copy the bad ideas kind of moments. But a good idea that that definitely got copied well was revealed in Japan this week. So There's a maglev train in Japan that got above 500 kilometers per hour, which in America is called 300
measurement.
Yeah, it's called 311 miles an hour, which is really fast. It's really, really, really fast. So I only point this out. I point this out as kind of a copied idea, because when I was in China, I went to Shanghai for work, and I took a cab from the airport. Apparently, I could have taken a maglev from the airport just outside of Shanghai to Shanghai Pudong proper. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And so I looked into it, and I was able to find a thing about taking a maglev out to the airport on the way out. And I'm like, oh, well, great. Let's do that. That makes perfect sense. It turns out that the way it's set up in China is it really is just a demonstration track. So there's a... And it's been there for years, apparently. It was built as a, like, let's show off some technology, and then it has not been updated, essentially, since then. But the end of the track is actually not in Shanghai proper either. It's also outside. So both ends of the track are not nearby the things that you're supposed to go to, because I had to take a cab to the drop-off point for the train, and then when I got to the other end, I actually took a shuttle to the airport. But anyway,
kind of like BART with its current setup.
Yeah. yes. Unfortunately, very, very similar to BART's the San Francisco airport BART. Anyway, but the maglev itself is crazy. It's amazing. I don't know. I don't remember how fast the one in China went, but it's amazing. So the one in Japan, like I was saying, got up to 311 miles per hour, which is wicked crazy fast. And there's no there is sound, but it's not. It's weird. Like it is kind of like BART in that there's that kind of weird hum as it's you know, moving along, but there's no rattling at all. There's a little bit of vibration that I think comes from just, you know, the fact that you're cutting through the air at, you know, hundreds of miles an hour. But other than that, it just feels like a very, very smooth train. I was hoping there would be some kind of, like, you step on the train and then they engage the magnets and it, like, floats. No, it's already floating. But they had a nice little, like, cutaway when you get there, so you can look and you can actually see underneath the train. And it's not floating by like even inches, apparently. It's just very, very close to the surface that it's on. But maglevs are awesome. So hooray for Japan for throwing one together. I think this one is also kind of a demonstrator track, but I can see, just because it's Japan, they're probably going to do something crazy with it. So hopefully...
It's odd that a small country like Japan has this technology and is probably going to deploy it in a reasonable amount of time. And we have this huge country, which could benefit a lot more from it.
Yeah.
But we're not going to get it. It's never going to happen.
Not in my backyard, anyway. But yeah, maglev trains, definitely a thing. Hopefully coming soon to a town near you. Maybe. But I'm going to give a quick hello to a listener for the station. The station podcast.
Station. Living in the past, Alan.
Harkening back to my radio DJ days there. But
are you having a college flashback?
I might be. I am drinking a beer. Although I never would have had this beer in college. I'm having an Avery White Rascal. It's their Belgian white. Yeah, when I was in college, like we
didn't
really
have
do
beer like that.
No. No, it was kind of a natty light kind of college.
No, but I'm saying, like, that beer probably wasn't even invented.
No, I agree. But anyway, listener to the show, Kevin, he tweeted at me earlier this week about a thing we had done on the show with the magnetic cover board that we had talked about. And how we had mentioned, you know, we wanted to see someone that could actually ride a board, a skateboard, do it. And so there was a video of Tony Hawk riding on the hoverboard, and it's pretty cool. I mean, he obviously knows how to ride it, and so he was a lot more active than the one like scientist guy or whatever who was running it when we initially did the story. So that was pretty cool. The one thing that I think I noticed from this was they did have that little kind of mini U-pipe that they were putting the hoverboard on, and you could tell that it still doesn't quite work as well as like a real U-pipe, because it's, you know, you can't like kick off the corner or anything like that. You have to pretty much stay on the surface the whole time. But what's interesting is because it's not touching the surface, there's no friction. There's nothing to slow you down. So at the end of the video, Tony Hawk is sliding down one side, and then he goes up the other side, and he's kind of going into a bit of a spin. And that spin just accelerates. It does not stop as he's going, you know, back and forth. And I think it's only 3 or 4 times, and the spin has, you know, got so fast that it essentially threw him off. And that's the one thing that I think is most interesting for the maglev, and for this too, is that, you know, frictionless kind of aspect to it. It's like, yes, it's floating, and that's really cool. Don't get me wrong, but the whole I barely have to push it and I will continue at that speed, you know, that's that kind of stuff is where the I was going to say where the rubber meets the road, but but yeah, that's the cool science behind it. It's you know, from an energy efficiency perspective, assuming, you know, they're not doing some kind of crazy stuff to keep the surfaces levitating, you know, the amount of force that you have to apply to get it to move is so much slower, or so much lower than with any other propulsion. So it's just cool. Maglevs, please. Can we do that?
Maglev everything.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely something to buy once the kits kind of come down in price. But until the kits do come down in price, there's a Chrome extension that we found this week called Time is Money. And it has a novel way of showing prices of things. What it does is you have to give it your salary or your hourly rate for work, and then what it does is it, when you see a price on Amazon or anything like that, instead of showing whatever the price is, it shows it as an amount of time that you have to work in order to pay off whatever that is. And I think it's a really kind of funny way to look at stuff when you're buying things, because sometimes money, especially if you're a credit card person, sometimes those numbers almost don't mean anything. It's like, oh, that's a number. I'm sure, you know, if I, you know, sat down and looked at my bank statement, I could probably figure out how quickly I could buy something like that, or how much I could buy something. Or if you have a credit card, maybe you've already bought it. In the amount of time we've talked about it, your one click has kicked in, and it's, that money is just gone. But by displaying it in time, I think it does make it a little clearer about how much something costs.
I think this extension and the app that tells you how much money you make while pooping at work really could work well together. Really bringing some real numbers to your life. Really breaking it down.
Yeah.
Where is your time and money going?
No, this
so
is...
So if you were to combine those, like, all right, I made this much money while being in the bathroom at work, and convert those hours into, okay, I just, I could buy this whatever just by taking a crap. I'd probably take a lot of craps, but you know.
Wow. Wow. This big data mashup, I think that's a thing. Yeah. Some app developer, get on that, please.
Yeah, combine them.
Now, checking out the Time is Money extension, in no way does the podcast endorse the movie In Time with with Justin Timberlake, where this is the dystopian future where they use time as a currency. And only the rich people can stop clocks and somehow not age because time is now a commodity. That movie was awful.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I thought I saw a bunch of good movies this week.
Oh, yeah. We've been talking about a couple movies for a couple weeks now. So we're going to be moving ever so slowly into spoiler territory for those listening to the show. So we're going to talk about what? Which one should we talk about first? Or should we give an overview of what we've seen?
We both saw three movies that, you know, in the time that it's been since we last recorded. So I would say we should start with John Wick.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Awesome.
I really, really enjoyed that movie. It was it was fun. It was good to see Keanu Reeves being Neo again, essentially. Although not really. I mean, no. I don't think at any time did he bust out two guns at once. So from that perspective, it wasn't. I mean, it was just a good action revenge movie.
They could have called it Double Tap the Movie.
Yeah,
so many double taps.
That was something that that Julie noticed too. It's like, oh, he's so good. Like everybody got a headshot. Everyone is dead in that movie.
It almost felt like every bullet that he fired either hit somebody or it would have hit them if something hadn't been in the way.
It does. It's a movie with a pretty high body count, I think. It still feels or it felt very satisfying to see, because it opens up with not exactly a spoiler, but it opens up with you know, a shot of him, and he's, you know, clearly bleeding, and he's been in, you know, a lot of fighting and gunfighting at that point. And then the movie is told by rewinding. So you get that kind of thing right away, like, okay, well, we're gonna end there probably, and the ride to get there is great. It's I think they do a good amount of setup at the beginning to really get you invested. A good amount of setup with not a lot of talking. It's I mean, it's not what is it? A Pixar level.
There's a lot of sad Keanu.
Yeah. It's not a Pixar level of like, you know, character setup. But it's you know, they've definitely found a little bit of like emotion to run with story wise at the beginning to get you invested in what would otherwise be a completely, like, I don't understand why we're doing this kind of.
Well, it almost felt like it was like the fourth sequel in a series of movies.
Mm-hmm.
But they did such a good job building the world that it took place in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They had a backstory. Like, they did so much to build up his, like, myth, myth of John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the scene towards the beginning when John Leguizamo is talking to the mob boss, and he tells him, you know, what happened. And he'd always say, like, it was John Wick's car. He killed his dog.
Yeah.
And all he would say is, oh. And then just take the phone.
Right. Right. There's a lot in it. I mean, so not only did they have, like, the backstory of Keanu's character, the backstory of that mob boss and how his empire was built. There was so many little, like, things. There was that hotel where there are like rules about, you know,
the continental.
Yeah, rules of conduct and like honor among thieves, or lack thereof, and just a lot of interesting kinds of things. And I think you're right. I think it does feel like, you know, it there were probably, you know, a couple movies before this that were written, shot, and then are probably hiding somewhere. I hope so. I would like to see more kind of in that world, and they totally could. It'd be really interesting to see if it did well enough to merit something like that.
Because it's not often you get a movie with this good of a cast that actually has a script and pacing and everything that'll live up to the cast.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even little roles were played by great actors.
Mm-hmm.
And Alfie Allen really has that whiny little bitch role after Theon Greyjoy on Game of Thrones.
Oh, man.
Basically Theon again. Like, I'm tough. No, you're not.
Yeah, yeah. It's Theon, and he never goes, he never gets to Reek levels. So.
No.
But yeah, he was good. I actually didn't notice, what's her name?
Adrian Pilecki?
No. She was the bartender at the hotel.
I didn't know who that was.
She apparently was Bridget Moynihan?
No, that she was the wife.
Oh, am I doing that wrong? Really?
Yeah, Bridget Moynihan was the wife.
Oh, crap. Okay, well, now I have to see it again, and I would not mind seeing it again. It was
I
want to
watch it again with a clicker so I can count how many people he kills, because it's a lot.
I wonder if they did that in D-Box. Unfortunately, when I went, not unfortunately, the movie I saw in D-Box was the next movie we're talking about, or do you want to save that one?
I still have one more thing about John Wick.
Uh-huh.
It was directed by the guy who was Keanu Reeves' stunt double in The Matrix.
Oh, it's so good.
So the director of this movie, this is like one of his first actual directing a movie projects.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a stunt coordinator in a ton of movies.
Yeah.
And it definitely showed.
Yeah, the stunt work.
The gunplay was great.
So good.
Hand-to-hand fighting was great.
Yeah.
It didn't get slow at any point. Like, it didn't drag on. It was like, all right, we're in. All right, everybody's dead. Roll credits.
Yeah. Oh, this is very, very good. I think a lot of it, you know, a lot of it is that pacing, that eye for having that, the right amount of pacing, because there are some natural kind of slow points. And I think storytelling wise, you have to give people kind of a chance to take a break or breathe. But I think they found that balance, you know, just right. And also it's pretty funny. It's never too serious. They could have easily made this a revenge movie that is completely humorless. And actually when it starts, you don't quite get the tone that it would be funny, but as the movie kind of rolls through, it peppers it with just enough that I think it fits. Yeah. 100%
recommend. Yeah, it gets a full recommendation from me.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
It's nice to see a trailer for a movie and you think, oh, I bet that's what this movie is. And it's exactly what you think it's going to be. And it's still entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think in that, kind of in that vein, I want to talk about Birdman first, actually.
Okay.
I think the other movie will have more to chew on. But for I watched Birdman on Saturday, and you saw it today?
Yeah, I saw it today.
Yeah, and had you seen any trailers for it or any buzz?
I had seen the first trailer they put out, and then I tried to stay away from it.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I liked it a lot too. I mean, I had no idea at all that of how well that movie was shot. I'm amazed.
It's like one. It's not one continuous shot, but it looks like one continuous shot.
Right. And that was something that I think we brought up when I talked about it. I had read one review where it had said that, and I'm like, oh well, that's really interesting. I bet. I bet that looked, you know, that's kind of cool, but it'd probably wear off after a little while. And it didn't. It still looked great. So it really is that. And they do, I mean, I'm still amazed at how they did some of the shots. I mean, there's some transitions where you can kind of figure out what they did. Like if the actor is walking into a doorway and it's dim, it kind of fades to black naturally because you're changing from a dark space to a light space. And so they use that as a transition point. I'm sure there were lots of things like that, but like there were other more subtle things, like a person would round a corner first before the camera did. And they probably used the, you know, sweeping around the corner as a transition point and things like that. But, the whole movie is shot, you know, as if it were, you know, someone essentially just in the world as it's happening, and
it's very intimate.
Yeah. It's. I noticed that too. Like all of the scenes when people are talking, it's much closer than I think you would get in a movie. And because it's shot in that kind of continuous way, they're not doing the perspective shift of like, here's person A talking, and let me do the reverse angle for person B talking. So it was almost all of those talking shots are, you can see both people. And in order to see both people, you're like right up next to, you know, them when they're talking. It's really well shot.
Great cast.
Yeah.
Everyone was funny when they needed to be funny, and yeah, serious when they needed to be serious. And yeah, it felt different. Mm-hmm. It was a different movie than what I'd seen. It was also, there are a lot of really meta themes about it, with it being Birdman, and you could have just substituted the word Batman for Birdman in a lot of.
Oh my God! The scene. When he says something like, you know, I haven't been, you know, he hasn't acted since like 1992 or whatever, and I realized, was that Batman?
So Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, he's poking fun at himself a little bit, and I think that really helped. I mean, he even mentions it during the movie. There's a moment where he's like, oh, and this play is very, you know, has all of these characters who are, you know, it's like a microcosm of, you know, a screwed up microcosm of my own life. And it's like, that's how those movies are, right? You know, it's the play within the play kinds of thing. And he pokes fun at it. I mean, or the, you know, the director and the writer poke fun at that. And I think that kind of amount of self-awareness plays into the believability of it in a weird way, right? Like acknowledging that it is kind of not real makes it, you know, makes it easier to suspend your disbelief as you're watching it. And it's a little...
Edward Norton really reminded me of his performance in Death to Smoochie. That comedy.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was funny because in you know, in the movie, Edward Norton's character is very like, I'm an actor and theater is my life, and these, you know, you movie types are not, you know, as soon as you're done, I'm still going to be here like acting my heart out. And I think, you know, it's funny because obviously he's a movie actor, but it's in the same way as, you know, when you're watching Fight Club, another Edward Norton movie where Brad Pitt is talking about, you know, the silliness of materialism and always looking good and things like that. it's a nice like, wait a minute, what? Wait.
I'll be surprised if this doesn't get multiple Oscar nominations.
Mm-hmm.
For Michael Keaton and just for probably for Best Picture.
Yeah, it was really good. I think the thing I liked just the most about it was exactly what you said, how close the camera is and how so many of the like conversations you're in it, you're there, and they really did a good job of using the cinematography and the pacing to put you kind of in the middle of all of those scenes. Even the ones that were like kind of a little off the rails and weird, it's just like, no, this is fine. This is, you're on board at that point, and it's you just want to see like you just want to see more of it. I mean, the plot itself, I wouldn't say is terribly complex either. I mean, it's very there are a few plot lines, and there's some subplots like kind of with different character kind of side things going on, but it's mostly just a really, really interesting exploration of everyone and getting, you know, just getting so close to like all of these people, whether they deserve to be, you know, you deserve to be close to them or not. It's just more of a like, here's where we are and this is what we're going to get. And it's still kind of compelling. So I like that a lot.
It also kind of reminded me of the movie Game 6.
Hmm.
Which also starred Michael Keaton, and it had Robert Downey Jr. in it.
Okay.
Where he plays a playwright, and he goes and basically finds the critic who crushes his play.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I think they would be a good double feature.
Yeah.
Good Michael Keaton double feature would be Game 6 and Birdman.
Oh, I was going to go Beetlejuice, but, you know.
You can put anything with Beetlejuice.
I think there were a couple nice points when you know, he drew on some of that character actor stuff from Beetlejuice. some good stuff. I just like seeing Michael Keaton in things. He's really, really good.
Yeah, he should be in more things.
Yeah. Hear, hear. Okay, so now the big movie that we saw. I mentioned I saw it in D-Box. Did you see it in IMAX?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so we're talking...
Full 70 millimeter.
Yeah, we are talking Interstellar right now. So, I thought it looked wonderful. I think so much of it looked great. There were so many things that looked really, really, really good in that movie. Actually, I'm not sure I liked it as a movie.
I loved it.
Well, that's the end of the Not a Thing podcast. It's good having you on the air. And
not that it didn't have its issues. I kind of felt like he was trying to make two movies at once.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I don't know, things that didn't quite reconcile. It's not a perfect movie, but... There was so much that put my jaw on the floor that I don't get that feeling of awe from a lot of filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Nolan still does that for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think absolutely. There are some sequences that are phenomenal, and they must have looked really, really good in IMAX. I mean, I know for D-Box, it was great. Like every moment in a shuttle was amazing. But I was so over the plot twists in the movie and the
even see them as plot twists. Really? I saw it as like it was actual representation of relativity.
Oh, no. I meant, Matt Damon's character.
Oh, Matt Damon. Oh, okay. That, yeah, it kind of felt like a cross between 2001 A Space Odyssey and the movie Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I had the same feeling about the third act of Sunshine.
Yeah.
When they find the other captain and he's gone crazy and he just goes to kill everybody.
Well, no.
Like, wait, what?
Sunshine is a great movie. Until it turns into
last 15 minutes.
Until it turns into a different movie. Yeah, it was a great space movie, and it didn't need to be like, yeah, you're right. It didn't need to go kind of splasher or slasher mode. And I think, like Interstellar would have been a great movie just as a like space movie, but then making it more a, not exactly a. I don't know. I'm not sure what you call that.
Well, I think There was nothing in it that I don't think he was. Like, everything that was might have been off. I can see what the message he was trying to send was, like in making the film.
Okay.
I mean the whole idea of, you know, he was the best of us.
Sure.
It's the same theme that he had in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
It's like even the best of humanity can be corrupted.
Yeah.
When faced with just insanity of reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still, there's a bit of a plot hole about like why they, or we, or whoever created the black hole and everything else. But I don't know. I think at that point, like I have to not think about it too hard.
Every like one thing like that that's ambiguous or not really explained or may just straight up doesn't make sense. There's so many things that they did right.
Yeah.
That were scientifically accurate.
Yeah.
That I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the scene when they go down to the first planet.
Yeah.
And it takes longer than they thought, and they come back. It's like, oh, it's 23 years have passed.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
I did really enjoy all of the robots.
Oh, the robots are great.
I think the scene when was it Tars? He's on the water and Anne Hathaway's character gets stuck, and so
it's a spin.
Yeah, right. And he goes, "Oh, I'll get her," and goes into like running mode essentially to get out there. It's fantastic. It's really so many things about that, and the you know, I didn't look up who voiced them, but you know they
weren't
great
anybody
job.
That I recognized.
Okay, yeah, but they did a great job of setting those robots up. I think some of the conversation during the during the kind of climax when it's Matthew McConaughey's character and the robot are talking. Some of that felt a little forced, but I think there were a lot of good things in the movie, and I have to give it more credit than I am, because I know when I first saw 2001, I had no idea what's going on at the very end of that movie. And that was kind of a hard and long movie to watch for me when I was younger. I think, you know, giving a little more kind of professional distance helped for that. And because I still think that's a, you know, just wonderful movie. I think the pacing of it and stuff a lot of that doesn't translate well. So maybe giving a little more time for Interstellar would help. I'm not saying that. My opinion can't change about it. I mean, I really did like it. I just don't know if I would necessarily watch it again soon. I need to have a little more time before I see it again.
Considering how many movies get made and that I see that have the same problems, but then don't have the great visuals and other filmmaking tools to make up for it, like it made me really happy to see this movie.
Yeah. I'm just happy to see movies in space. I'm a huge fan of those kinds of movies. I mean, it almost doesn't matter what the plot is. If you're going to space, I'm already mostly on board.
I mean, it did what a science fiction movie should do, which is create a critique of our modern society through a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
All the issues that were in the movie are issues that we are either dealing with or going to be dealing with soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had had good messages, and it looked good, sounded good. I liked it. I'm gonna go see it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I still feel it's a little heavy-handed.
Well, it's definitely heavy-handed. I'm not gonna argue that. But sometimes you need a heavy hand.
Yeah. Cool. Well, if you go see that, I'll probably go see John Wick again, and then we'll all be okay. Cool. Well, I think we've taken enough time from folks for the show. Thank you for all listening. Welcome to all our new listeners. If you would like to contribute to the show in any more meaningful way than listening, we'd love it. Although if you are listening and want to continue listening, that's great. That's actually a big plus for us too. So, you know, if you want, everyone can contribute in their own way. It's good.
Come be a guest.
Yes, if you'd like to be a guest, we'd love it. If you'd like to sponsor the show, we will say anything. Hashtag Flat Earth. Brendan, I will talk to you next week.
Until next time, Alan.